Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. A little after 5:20, Mark Schlereff will join us to talk about the Saints. Certainly Super Bowl and his thoughts on the weekend that just passed. And certainly some of the hires. Interesting. 73-year-old Pete Carroll getting back in the game. Man, at 73 years old, man, he's a good – he don't look his age, and he got a lot of energy.
Mike, I
got
to find it. Someone had – I think it was Brett Coleman, who does great work with bootleg football, had a really funny tweet about the average age of the AFC West head coaches versus the average age of the NFC West head coaches, and it's like a gigantic gap. Basically, because now you have Pete Carroll, you have Andy Reid, Sean Payton, and Jim Harbaugh all in the same division. Talk about some, you know, Bobby always says skins on the wall. That is a division of legendary head coaches. Let's see here. I'm looking for it. I'll find it in here just a second. So let's.
And you think about, you know, Pete Carroll wins a national championship in college football, and then he wins the Super Bowl title. Jim's won a national championship in college football. I think eventually, with the right pieces in place, he's got a shot. What Andy's done is unprecedented. And Sean's won a Super Bowl. Here in New Orleans.
And so here it is, Mike. The average age of the NFC West head coaches is 40. And that's like Jonathan Gannon and Mike McDonald, Kyle Shanahan, and all those cats. And also McVay, Sean McVay for the Rams. The average age for the AFC West coaches is 65. So Brett Coleman
neighborhood, Charlie.
Yeah, Bootleg Football had a great tweet about that. But like we mentioned, that's a legendary division of coaches out in the AFC West.
Yep, and Pete don't act his age, man. He's always high energy, and Pete can still coach. Now, you got to find a quarterback because, again, that's what didn't make that job palatable to a lot of people. You didn't have the young quarterback in place, and you don't have one of the top picks. So you'd have to trade up to get if it's a Shedeur Sanders or a Cam Ward. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, right. Yeah, man, we got two of the big Croatian coaches back. We got Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick. We're just waiting on Nick Saban to come out of retirement now.
Man, Nick enjoying that. Those Saturday mornings, and he's good at it, too.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's got a plush job. Look, I'm hearing rumors Brandon Ingram might go to the Raptors. Hey, if we get a first round for him, I'm fine with that. We got to do something with that. As far as the coaching situation with the Saints, Mike and Charlie, this is my take as a fan, okay? It might be a bridge year. We're not going to get a quarterback. Mike, you know, we're probably not going to get a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback in this draft, and not at our spot. And we got Derek Carr for another year. I don't know if longer than that. But, you know, it's coming down, obviously, maybe to three guys, right? Rizzi, McCarthy, or maybe Kellen Moore. Now, I know a lot of talking heads have been pumping sunshine with McCarthy, and I'm fine with that, okay? I think that, you know, like Sean Payton, you have the right quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay, Sean Payton with Drew Brees here, it worked out, won a Super Bowl. Now, I don't think the fan base is all that excited because, you know, we've had a bad history recently, Gail Benson, some of the, well, Loomis was part of the old way, we can't get rid of him, right? Dennis Allen was part of the old way, let's keep him a little longer. That didn't work out. That didn't resonate with the fan base. Pete Carmichael, same thing. Mike McCarthy was here, and I'm not, you know, dogging that. I'm just saying his involvement in the past has some fans, I think, it's not going to – I don't think between Derek Carr and Mike McCarthy it's going to energize the fan base, Mike, to want to buy tickets. And it's a business. It's about selling tickets. Now, I'll say this. Rizzi might be the one year, and, you know, the players are advocating for him, Kamara and this and that. If you want to do a one-year deal, he takes it and says, you know what, we're still in rebuild mode. We're in cap hell. Let's let it ride. Or you go with a big splash, Kellen Moore, it works out or it doesn't. And maybe people are like, well, this is a guy we're not that familiar with. He's in the Super Bowl this year. I just want to get your take why some Saints fans, and this is just my take, are not super thrilled about the idea of Mike McCarthy. I know he doesn't want to come in for 1 year. He might want to get 3 years or something like that. But do you think it's because of our experience with previous coaches that have been here so long, and Loomis and front office guys that just seem to be here, and Gail Benson's propensity to stick with everything, Oshner with the medical system, with the medical staff, and then Pete Carmichael, Dennis Allen, Loomis, is this scaring some of the fan base away from wanting McCarthy here?
Yeah, I think you're right on it. I think a lot of people, to a certain age, they remember all these other guys, too, that came in here with credentials. Bum Phillips, Hank Stram, Mike Ditka. How did that work out? Didn't work here at all. Sean Payton changed culture here. He did something that only Jim Mora had done before. He changed the culture here. For a lot of people a certain age, they don't get it. Oh, y'all brag on Sean, this and that. Look what he took over and how he built this franchise. You don't get it. It's tough when you don't have any history of winning and to put that where he put it. You know, in a short period of time, you go to the NFC Championship game in year one. A couple years later, you win the Super Bowl. You got a couple other chances that didn't work out. But what he did, especially early on, to change the culture of this franchise, to put the spotlight on it along with Drew Brees, never done before. Now, they got a couple people generations back who don't remember that. They don't, that's ancient history. Okay, Hank Stram, Bum Phillips, Mike Ditka. But it happened here. It happened here. Sean was the guy that really kind of turned everything. While Jim Moore took it to a certain level, Sean went much higher than that. They didn't win a playoff game with Jim Moore. Bobby's the first one to tell you. He wasn't involved in a playoff win. So I think for fans younger, they get a lot of their information off social media, and for older fans, they remember guys that came in here with a lot of credentials and didn't quite work. I think there is some apathy. I hate to say it, but I think there is some about this franchise no matter what.
There's something to be said, Mike, about taking the home run hack and just swinging out of your shoes, right? Because I think the Saints have a decision to make with this, and it feels like it's down to the two candidates at this point. You guys made a great point last night about Rizzi. If Rizzi was going to be coming back, they wouldn't have let Clint Kubiak walk out the door and go to Seattle, because Rizzi would have probably kept Kubiak on his staff as the offensive coordinator. That would have made all the sense in the world. Instead, now he's in Seattle. So I don't know if I really buy the fact that Rizzi's still one of the lead candidates. I think it's kind of a two-man race at this point, and it feels like there's the clear separation. You have McCarthy, who's kind of the old, proven coach. He's got the resume there. But then
he's won two spots.
Right.
Not one, two spots.
A 608 winning percentage in 18 years in the NFL is nothing to scoff at. I mean, it's a legit – he's got skins on the wall, as Bobby would say. However, like I said, swinging for the fences, right? Just swinging at your shoes, and maybe you miss. But it's kind of the opportunity that you take with a guy like Kellen Moore and the young hotshot offensive coordinator that's 36 years old. He's never been a head coach. But even at 36, Mike, I had someone that called in and was asking, what's the difference between Kellen and Joe Brady? Joe Brady has not been an offensive coordinator for as long as Kellen Moore has. He's 36 years old. He's been an OC for 6 years. I know that I think the Broncos just hired a young guy, a 28-year-old, to be their OC. And so it's kind of the youth movement and offensive coordinating spears and everything like that. But Bobby has said it multiple times at this point as well. he's been at different spots. He's been at Dallas. He's been with the Chargers, and most recently this year with the Eagles. Four top 10 scoring offenses as a coordinator for Kellen Moore. And I think that's why you saw them. They're so intrigued with him. They flew out to Philadelphia to meet with him.
Hey, that's serious.
Yes.
When you get on a private plane and you go to Philly to talk to someone. Also, too, you grew up watching him as a player at Boise State and his level of success there. And so for a lot of people, they're in their 30s and 40s. I watched that guy.
Merrill Reese brought it up when we talked with him last night during the second guest show, the voice of the Eagles. He's just like, he's one of the most winningest quarterbacks in college football history.
Yep.
He went like 50-3 with Boise State. He joins Detroit. He goes to the Cowboys. He's a backup. He gets injured. He becomes an assistant coach right off the bat. And so he's kind of got more experience as an OC in the NFL than Joe Brady did, despite them being around the same age.
The one thing I would want to know from him, if it would have been him, Brady, Kingsbury, whatever, who are you going to have run your defense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I know you know offense, and you're going to bring in people that you trust to run your offense. Who's going to run your defense? You don't know everything if you're a head coach. Some people are, Dennis Allen calling plays on offense. Come on, Dennis Allen ain't calling no plays on offense. Okay? He's your defense. He was the defensive coach.
So
just like Sean, I'm not saying he didn't every once in a while stick his nose in the business with Greg Williams, Rob Ryan,
right,
or Dennis Allen, but he stayed out of that. He let them take care of the defensive side of the ball.
My general point is that you kind of know what you're getting with McCarthy as a head coach. The big unknown is Kellen Moore.
Yes.
And if you swing and you make contact and that ball's going 400 feet, you hit a home run, a grand slam even with Kellen Moore. If you miss and he's not the guy, he's not head coach ready, oh well. It's not like, it's not the end of the world, right? So I don't know. I think it's an intriguing question. Do you want the more kind of proven commodity, the one that's been there, done that for almost two decades in the NFL, or do you want to take the home run hack and try and see what you get with Kellen Moore?
That unknown. That unknown part, that's something, and, you know, Scott Sidwell brought it up. It's the mystery of hiring coaches at any level.
Right.
You don't really know. You think you might know, but you really don't. We'll be back with Mark Slarev here to talk NFL Super Bowl Saints right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTeo along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Slarev, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Before we start talking a little Super Bowl talk, I don't know how much interaction you've had with Kellen Moore, but I'd like to get your thoughts on him. Saints flew out to Philly yesterday to talk to him about the opening with the Saints as a head coach. And your thoughts on Kellen Moore. And the one thing I give him a lot of credit, I always thought he threw the football. He was a little bit too cutesy throwing the football at some other places. But this year, he knew what he had with that offensive line and Saquon, and they really they beat people up in the trenches. Now, if Kellen Moore could bring their offensive line and Saquon and Hurts and the receivers, hey, I'd call it a deal. But that doesn't happen that way. He adjusted his system to the players that he had in Philly. Now, give him full credit for that.
Yeah, he did a great job with that. And obviously, when you got Saquon, and as good as that guy is. But, you know, let's face it. You know, the Giants couldn't figure it out. And, yeah, and the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, let's face it. They're one of the most talented, you know, top-to-bottom rosters in the National Football League without question. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions about this, Kansas City versus, you know, versus Philly. I mean, what Kansas City has is great coaching, right? They've got Andy Reid. They've got Steve Spagnuolo. And of course, they've got Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, check mark, check mark, check mark in their box. But when you talk about rosters, offensive line goes to Philly. You talk about the running back goes to Philly. You talk about the wide receiver, tight end positions go to Philly. I give the D-line, the linebackers, and the secondary all to Philly. They got the number one defense in football. So, with that said, Kellen Moore has done a great job of utilizing the players that are at his disposal and saying, yeah, you know what? I've been known as a passing coach, but how in the world would I have the best offensive line, the biggest, strongest dudes, and the best running back in football I'd be a moron not to use that. And so I'll give him a ton of credit for going in that direction. Kudos to him.
One of the things, too, I'll flip it here. Man, Buffalo had such success running the ball, for almost three quarters. And then I think Joe Brady unplugged it. He was like, okay, Josh, go win us the game throwing the ball. My thing is, Kansas City's still trying to stop the run. With that offensive line the Bills had, and they were really good this year, and James Cook running the ball, Mark, it kind of perplexed me. Why did you get away from that, especially in crunch time?
Yeah, it's one of my biggest questions about the Bills coaching staff. You know, I go back to last year. They were kicking the Chiefs' ass in the divisional round, and they were running the snot out of the ball, and then all of a sudden, Chiefs make a little bit of a comeback, and it's almost as though the coaching staff quits coaching and says, go, hey, Josh, go win it for us. Hey, Josh, you know, they're not running the tush-push correctly. They're not doing a very good job with it. They miss it a couple times, and yet they keep going back to it. And, you know, that last drive, they get the ball with 3:23 left, right? I mean, that I think it was 3:20, maybe it was 3:25, but they get the ball with, you know, needing a field goal to tie it, a touchdown to win the damn thing with 3 minutes left. And the very first run of the game, they just come off of Kansas City putting a drive together and kicking a field goal. The very first run of the game of that drive, excuse me, goes to Ty Johnson, their backup running back. James Cook's not in the game.
I don't get it.
And I'm like, well, is he hurt? What happened? Like, he said, did something happen? Then he comes in the next game, the next couple of plays. He's in the backfield. So wait a minute. You ran it down their throat. You had one drive that went 11 plays, and 10 of them were runs, I believe. And you had like eight straight runs in a row. And yet, wait a minute, they went on a drive, Kansas City did. You come back in the first run of that drive is a negative 1 yard run to Ty Johnson, your backup. Now, you know, you sit there and say, okay, well then on second down, you know, that Josh Allen converts it on a scramble and we're right back in business. But you got the ball with 3 minutes and change left. You had a chance to win the football game, and you essentially take a dump in your helmet. You guys, from a coaching staff standpoint, from a player standpoint, you can't execute. And, you know, I'll go to – they've got a touchdown on a first down. They're in a bunch formation, and they run bubble screen and go, and Shakir gets locked up with a middle linebacker. Now, they're in dime, so it's a DB, but they're locked up in a split safety look with a middle linebacker. All you got to do is run down the middle. Tony Romo says, well, Josh Allen threw it away. No, he didn't. He was throwing the go. He was throwing the seam go between the two safeties, and Shakir stopped. And you're like, you're matched up with split safeties and one-on-one with the middle linebacker. Like, that's a touchdown. What are you doing? Like, what in the world are you doing? So critical moments, and this is the difference between the Chiefs and the Bills, critical moments, the Chiefs coaching staff knows exactly what to do, how to do it, and they've got the players to execute it. Critical moments, the Bills coaching staff folds. They wilt like a summer in the flower, or a flower in the summer heat, and their players can't execute. And then on fourth down and five, you get turn protection to the left. So you're protected to the left. You're turning, you're sliding your protection to the left. The only place that you can get beat is a blitz from the right-hand side. Kansas City blitz from the right-hand side, meaning that Spagnuolo knows exactly what you're doing, and he attacks your protection at its weakest point, and you roll right into the blitz. Now, Kincaid should have caught the pass, right? It's a fourth down and five. But if Josh Allen just rolls away from the blitz, he buys himself some time, and he sees Shakir on the swing pass, and that goes for a touchdown. So you had two plays that could have been potential touchdowns, at least long gains, and put you in field goal range, and you don't, as a football team, execute on either of those things. So we can sit and piss and moan about officiating and say Kansas City gets, you know, an unfair advantage, and we can say whatever we want about any of that stuff. But the bottom line is when push came to shove, the Buffalo Bills had it trickle down their legs.
Yep.
And the Kansas City Chiefs didn't.
Inside of Calls with Mark Slerfer, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Charlie?
Yeah, just before we move on to the NFC Championship game here, Mark, I mean, there's not too much to say about that, but we'll get to it in just a second. You know, James Cook not getting a touch in any of the final six plays was kind of baffling to me, given he was averaging 6.5 yards per carry, two touchdowns in the game. It almost reminded me a little bit, not as bad as what it was last year's AFC Championship game, where the Ravens just kind of abandoned the run when it mattered most. You know, some of these teams just try to out Mahomes, and it just never really works, does it? And so it's really unfortunate. Buffalo falls short once again, fourth straight loss to Kansas City in the postseason. But as you mentioned, you know, the coaching staff has a lot to do with that. And Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator, I mean, James Cook was not given a single touch in that final six-play drive that ended up basically ending the game. But I don't think you're going to see that with Kellen Moore and Saquon Barkley in the Super Bowl. So that's going to be something I'm intrigued.
No, if he doesn't get 25 or more carries, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree with you guys on that. You're 100% right about, you know, about the coaching stuff, you know, and sometimes I think we tend to forget. I mean, let's face it. You know, we talk about offensive genius and this, that, and the other, which the offense or just football and genius are mutually exclusive events. We're a bunch of PE majors, all right? Like, you know, I got paid handsomely for 12 years to put a thin piece of plastic on my head and slam into other people. There's no genius involved. And ultimately, we make the game a lot more complicated than it really is. You know, I think about you know, how we talk about quarterbacks. And I'm not saying it's not a hard job, but we're putting somebody in conflict. Hey, man, we're running some type of pin concept, you know, a post and an in, right? If the safety plays low on the in route, throw the post. If the safety plays high on the post, throw the in. It's not rocket science, right? Hey, man, we're putting the curl flat defender in conflict. If the curl flat defender plays low on the flat, throw the curl. If he plays high on the curl, throw the flat. It, like, we make it like, ooh, it's so complicated. All these quarterbacks are freaking geniuses. They're not, right? It's not like I get that it's hard. But we make it out to be this unbelievable complex. And one of the things I love about football is kind of the juxtaposition of simplicity and complexity, right? We try to make it look as complicated as possible, but it's a simple game. And when push comes to shove, you know what wins? Being more physical than your opponent. That's what wins. I mean, the physicality makes cowards of everybody, right? And if you just lean on people, it's amazing not only how good you can be, but how exhausted the other team gets and how many all of a sudden that equates to missed tackles, missed opportunities, missed assignments, all those things. So you're right about Saquon. Listen, man, give that guy his touches. And this is what I'll say about Kellen Moore. He's given him his touches. He understands that 8-man boxes, we know how to run. That doesn't deter us. We're going to give it to our guy because we're either going to block the line of scrimmage and get to the second level and create space, or we're going to block the line of scrimmage and Saquon Barkley is going to do a jump hook or jump cut when two guys get into one hole and he's going to be out the gate. And when he gets out the gate to the second level, there ain't safety in football that can run with that dude. And so they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a lot of Ole moves to get out of his way or just trying to hang on, so to speak. Mark, playing offensive line like you did for so many years, I was talking to Pete Jenkins about this yesterday, and, you know, Pete always watching defensive linemen. He said, Mike, right now, best defensive tackle in pro football is Jalen Carter. He said a lot of people would give that nod to Chris Jones, but he said Carter gets the nod. He plays the run much better than Chris. And he pointed out a lot of times in obvious running situations, Chris is watching on the sidelines. He's not playing. He said, but look at Carter. They don't take him out. Now, every once in a while he gets a breather, but he said, look how he plays the run. Now, he said he's not quite the pass rusher Chris Jones is because he's special as a big man to rush the quarterback. But he said all-around game, he said, I really believe Jalen Carter is the best defensive tackle in pro football today.
Mark, he's got the meanest of mean streaks, too. You watch that dude play, he is nasty with it.
Yeah, there is no question about that. Like Jalen Carter, the other thing is, I think Jalen Carter over the course of the playoffs has played like 98% of the snaps on defense.
Yep.
I mean, he doesn't come out of the game. Dude is a game wrecker, and I'm with you. I think he's playing better than anybody else. Now, the one thing that Chris Jones gives you the advantage of is you can put him in multiple positions. So you can go, okay, where's our weak link? Or if we want to lock him up on one weak link on the offensive line and then walk up linebackers, so you have to go, you know, you have to come make a mingo call. Mingo, mingo, meaning man. We got to go man to man. Now, Chris Jones can you know, dispense justice on that particular guy. But you're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, and there is no weakness. As a matter of fact, their starting center has a back spasm or something before the game. They dress him. He doesn't play. They're all pro, all everything. Left guard moves to center. He hurts his knee. During that time, they have a backup left guard that I don't even know who the guy is. And I'm watching him play going, damn, that guy could start on just about any team in the league. That dude can play. And then all of a sudden, they're all pro center. They're all pro left guard who's playing center gets hurt, and they're all pro center comes back in and plays the back injury, and they don't miss a skip or a beat, you know, with that left guard that's a backup playing. And, you know, and Saquon Barkley has over 100 yards the first run of the game. They get a little crack toss out the left-hand side, and he goes 60 yards for a touchdown. I mean, they are incredible. So there are no weak links. And so if I go flip side of that, Jalen Carter versus Kansas City, like they're pretty good as well. But those two guards inside, you can exploit both of those guys because Tooney moved out to the left tackle position. And so there are opportunities there for Jalen Carter to kind of do his business against that Kansas City offensive line.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always love to have you on and great insights. We appreciate it, and I hope to see you next week here in the Big Easy.
Thank you, my friend. Take care.
All righty. That was Mark Schlereff. Does a great job each and every week, and he's our Odyssey NFL insider and host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. When we return, our triple option feature, myself along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. It's our triple option feature. Steve, I'll throw it to you first.
Going to give a shout out to the Pelicans for all the issues that they've had. They've done a good job in drafting young players. Eve Missy now has been nominated to the Rising Stars game during All-Star weekend. And this is the sixth straight year now a Pels player has been selected for that game. Dating back to 2020, you had Zion Williamson, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Nicolo Melli. 2021, Zion again, then Nikhil Alexander-Walker again. In 22, it was Herb Jones. 23, Alvarado, Trey Murphy. 24, Jordan Hawkins, Dyson Daniels. And this year, Eve Missy making it to that Rising Stars game. So Pels doing a good job of stocking the cupboard with talent. Now can we just keep the guys healthy?
Yeah, good luck with that, Charlie.
I think he's kind of hitting the rookie wall at this point, guys, early in January. And, you know, hopefully he kind of picks it up later on. But just what we saw from him in December, the rookie of the month, well-deserved from being named to the Rising Stars Challenge. Guys, I'm going with the Brandon Ingram update today from Mark Stein, national NBA reporter. He said, quote, I'm told Toronto has emerged as a team to watch when it comes to Ingram. It remains to be seen whether the Raptors become more than that. Where Ingram is concerned, but the mere suggestion of a potential Raptors interest is the most significant development in weeks when it comes to New Orleans forward, who earned his lone all-star berth during the 2019-2020 season. So Toronto, the first team to kind of throw their hat in the ring for potentially trading for Brandon Ingram. You heard during the Sports Flash, Mike, we interviewed Bobby Marks a couple weeks back, and I asked him about what kind of the general vicinity, like what package the Pelicans could expect in a return from Brandon Ingram, and he said at least a first-round pick, which I would be happy with, guys, because this is a guy that's on an expiring deal.
Okay, are you expecting anything more than that?
Maybe a young player, potentially. You're going to have to figure out how to make salaries work in a deal with Toronto.
Yeah, that was what I was going to throw at you.
So, you know, it might be a salary dump for them where you get a young player and a first-round pick as well. That's kind of the ideal scenario at this point. He's on an expiring contract. We know that he didn't extend this offseason. That was very, you know, heavily talked about by us and other people around the Pelicans organization, that they didn't want to hand him the max contract extension that he was looking for. Now he's been out for basically a month and a half at this point with an ankle sprain, guys. And this has been a trend with Brandon Ingram. Whenever he gets injured, he sits out weeks longer than you anticipate him to. It's just, I don't want to say it's gotten too toxic, but it's kind of getting toxic at this point. So moving on from him, he's not going to re-sign here. Getting something for him ahead of the deadline would be a big deal. And just at this point, it feels like Toronto is the first team to throw their name into the hat. We're 9 days away from the trade deadline, and we'll keep you updated as this process goes. But do not expect Brandon Ingram to be on this team past February 6th.
Yeah, I agree with you, Charlie. I think you got to move him. What you get back in return, that's the big question mark. And I was listening to Mike Kafka talk today, and I was telling this to Charlie Long off the air that I remember this a few years back. Zach Strief and I, we eating supper one night after one of the Silver Slipper casino shows, and he was telling me about Mike Kafka. You know, he's 4 years older than Mike. Mike came out in 2010, and, you know, Zach was in the 2006 draft. They both went to Northwestern. And Kafka was the quarterback there. And Zach was, Mike, I'm telling you, one day, Mike Kafka is going to be a head coach in a National Football League. I was like, okay. At that time, he was the, I think, quarterback coach, maybe passing game coordinator with the Chiefs. We all know Andy runs the show, so to speak. But it's so funny to think back then, Zach made that call that I think he's going to get an opportunity. He gets an interview with the Saints. I think he's still a long shot to get the job, but it does give you a look into a guy that I think somewhere down the line is going to be a head coach and given that opportunity to be a head coach in the NFL. And I remember Zach telling me, Mike, I'm telling you, he's smart. He's a great leader. He understands this game very well. And he said, I'm not just telling you that because he went to Northwestern, but I think that was partially the story because they both went. And that was the connection there. But Zach talking about the eventuality with Kafka, I think about this is 3 or 4 years ago. And look, you know, he gets his real first interview with the Saints.
Right, because you said it happened when he was in Kansas City under Andy Reid's offensive staff. I think he was like a quarterback's coach. And then he goes to New York. He becomes the OC in 2022. Kafka, and then you also mentioned Weaver as well, Mike, two guys that are both kind of new to the process, the interviewing process for head coaching openings, and, you know, maybe they won't get the Saints job this cycle and they'll be left out, but they're two guys to keep an eye on for the future, getting their head coaching opportunities eventually.
Yeah, no, I'm getting to be an old pops in this business because, I scouted Anthony Weaver when he came out of Notre Dame when he was a defensive lineman there. And now he's a young guy in this business now, and he does have success when you look at how he's coached with both the Ravens and the Dolphins. We'll be back to finish it off in hour number two here of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to thank Mark Schlaff. Does a great job each and every week. One thing about Mark, man, he don't bite his tongue.
No,
you got something
not to
tell you, he's going to tell you. Steve, tell everybody a little bit about what's happening on Sports Talk after 6 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll get into a little bit of the Senior Bowl sound bank here from Jari Evans, also Mike Kafka, who's over there. 625, Chris Connor, who covers the Pels for Boot Crew Media. We'll talk to him about the Pels going winless on their three-game trek, road trek, and then coming back home tomorrow night hosting Dallas. 7 o'clock hour, switch gears a little bit, talk some LSU baseball season opener not too far away. Koki Riley, LSU baseball and football writer for the Times-Picayune and an advocate, will join us, get a little preview of some purple and gold baseball coming ahead.
I have a neighbor of mine that always tells me, Mike, there's two seasons in this world. Ain't none of this spring, summer, fall, winter. It's LSU football season, LSU baseball season. And we're fixing to get into it pretty quick with LSU baseball. And, man, look like Jay Johnson has really got a stacked roster this year.
Fingers
hopefully
crossed.
Stay healthy. Yeah. And get hot late. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.